Consumer Affairs. Good morning. Everybody have a great weekend.
Weekend.
I know Janet always does. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2442. Janet, can you?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, members. House Bill 2442 brought to you and sponsored by Representative Butler. And it would specify that a person who's designated as a health care representative under an advanced directive or a living will for health care purposes is considered a personal representative under the state and federal laws governing the disclosure of protected personal health information. Oregon's advanced directives law defines a process for a person to designate a health care representative for the purposes of making health care decisions if that person becomes unable to do so themselves. And last year, House Bill 2305 brought Oregon into compliance with federal, it's the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, it's called HIPAA, and this allowed for a personal representative to sign the disclosure forms that are required for the release of patient information. It was a big overhaul of patient privacy law. There was kind of a disconnect, and this would allow someone designated under an advanced directive to serve that purpose and sign forms, privacy forms as well, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Janet. We have Representative Butler here with us this morning. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Thank you very much for the opportunity of coming before you today with House Bill 2442. Usually on I would start off my testimony saying something really snappy, but this is Monday morning, and I'm going to leave all the snappy comments to Vice Chair Representative Schaffler.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I bring House Bill 2442 at the request of my brother, who is a practicing attorney in Eastern Oregon. We've been seeing more and more often the folks that have been interlineating on their testamentary documents as to who they are recommending to be their health care representative with regard to the federal HIPAA. And in that regard, Mr. Chair, he brought forward to my attention that we could just go ahead and add that statutory language that the personal representative would in fact have the rights that the personal representative, as your staff has suggested to you, that the personal representative would have the ability to be the representative for the federal HIPAA regulations and avoid interlineation of that language. In my brief and limited experience with regard to this, I think this would overcome many of the concerns of folks with regard to the privacy issues, release of information to their loved ones, to those who are seeing to their care. This cuts across to socioeconomic borders. It addresses issues with folks that may have their significant others those folks looking after their personal affairs and would have the ability to consult with them regarding the arrangements for their health issues while they're suffering last illnesses and those kinds of things. Recommend it to you as a possibility of a good way to address the concerns of many of those folks whose documents may not reveal who their intended personal health care representative would be other than through their personal representative information. And so I bring you that today in an attempt to try and reach out and strengthen Oregon's laws, make them more compatible for all people.
Thank you, Representative. Any questions? Representative Schaffler.
Thank you. I just have one question, Representative. If my wife, if I designate her to be the one responsible for my medical decisions and for some reason I can't do it, does this in any way broaden or restrict her ability to do that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Schaffler, Vice Chair Schaffler, it wouldn't, and I'm not a lawyer, and I'm sure that you could get legal counsel in that regard, it wouldn't necessarily restrict that ability. It basically says that for the release of information under the restrictions and requirements of confidentiality and protected information, that your wife, as your personal representative, could gain access to that information and be able to share as you would direct your wife to be able to share that information with the folks that really on a needs to know basis, and that would be very little different than any other arrangement up to this particular point. Some of our small hospitals in rural areas are having their own little form drawn up that says, you know, you're going to be the person that this is delivered to. Here, makes that no longer a requirement, that your wife is automatically your personal representative, and an additional form is not necessary. It's automatic.
Thank you. One
follow-up.
If my wife lets out information of my wild youth, I'm in big trouble.
Mr. Chair, my indication to the committee early on was the snappy remarks on money.
I didn't want to lay down.
Would have to come from Representative Chopper. He's on a roll now.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to get some more detail.
Any other questions? Seeing none. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Member.
Is there anyone else that would like to testify on House Bill 2442? Seeing none, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2442 and open a work session on House Bill 2442. I would entertain a motion. Representative Esquivel.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I make a motion that we forward the 2442 to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Esquivel moves House Bill 2442 to the House floor with due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, Katie, will you call the roll?
Representative Esquivel.
Aye.
Representative Gilman.
Aye.
Representative Colby.
Aye.
Representative Kicks.
Excuse.
Representative Chocolate.
Aye.
Representative Shields.
Aye.
Chair Brown.
Aye. Motion carries. Representative Butler, you'd like to carry it on the floor? Okay, thank you. We'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2439. Janet, please get us up to speed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2439 is sponsored and brought to you by Representative McPherson, who's also here to testify. And it would allow the bylaws of a private corporation to provide for the staggering of terms of the board of directors of the corporation. A bill last session, the Oregon Business Corporations Act, amended the Oregon Business Corporations Act to reflect changes to a Model Business Corporations Act, which periodically updates, is an update from the corporate law section of the American Bar Association. One provision of the legislation deleted the ability of corporations to stagger the terms of their board members through bylaws. You can see in the bill on the first line that the articles of incorporation had to be the way that you could stagger the terms of your board members. Mm-hmm. This would add back the term or the bylaws, and the provision in lines 18 through 24 make that retroactive to corporations that already had staggered terms through their bylaws. This is potentially an inadvertent change from last session that did not allow that. And the change would also go forward so that this would be one of the ways that corporations could stagger their terms of their board of directors. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Janet. Representative McPherson, please.
Mr. Chair, if it would be all right, I brought four other folks.
Certainly.
At the same time, I'd like to say good moment when I came forward later.
Hi, David.
Chair Brown, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Greg McPherson, representative for House District 38, and I'm here to testify on House Bill 2439, which is a technical fix to clean up a little rough edge in work that was done in the House Judiciary Committee and then moved through the process last session. It relates to staggered terms of boards of directors, and just so you get the context of this, it is a method by which public companies can create greater stability in the management of the organization to not have every member of the board of directors come up for election each year, but rather to have those terms overlap and staggered so that only a portion of the board of directors is coming up for an election. And it can be a significant issue in when there is a potential for a hostile takeover by other interests that would like to replace that board of directors and thereby take control of the corporation. And I think it's an important element to be careful of here in Oregon because of the history that we've seen over the last generation in which the number of public companies in the state has significantly declined. When I first came to Portland to enter law practice, there were a number of public companies, and a number of those names are now history in some instances because of hostile takeover activities. So this is a way of assuring that Oregon, helping to discourage a process by which Oregon may become an economic colony of other places where larger financial centers are able to exercise control. I'm going to turn it over now to a couple of colleagues here who know that more technical detail here and can speak to it. Jason, do you want to speak first?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Jason Browser. I'm an attorney in private practice in Portland, and as Greg said, I'm here to speak in favor of the bill. House Bill 2439, as Greg mentioned, is designed to allow, to essentially return the law to where it was pre-January 1, 2004, and allow Oregon corporations to stagger their boards in their bylaws in addition to their articles. It also makes it clear that companies that adopted bylaw provisions prior to January 1, 2004 would be able to continue to rely on the validity of those bylaw provisions. Authorization of staggered boards in the bylaws is important because it allows companies, as Greg mentioned, to provide for an important anti-takeover defense in their bylaws without having to take the time to obtain shareholder approval. It also enhances the corporate governance, the quality of corporate governance for our Oregon corporations, because it allows nominating committees and corporate governance committees in corporations to carefully vet fewer nominees for directors each year in the companies. The current statute hurts Oregon in a couple of ways. First of all, it exposes our companies here in Oregon to an increased risk of takeover by out-of-state hostile bidders. And it also penalizes several of our companies here in Oregon that are very large employers in the state because it calls into question the validity of bylaw provisions that they were that they adopted in many cases years before this statute, the current statute, went into effect. And for all these reasons, I would urge you to move House Bill 2439 to the floor.
Thank you, Jason. Representative Escobar.
Yes, we're putting in for the bylaws, and that was it was in there before, but it was deleted. Is that?
That's right.
You're grinning out there.
Chair Brown, members of the committee, my name is Andy Morrow. I am here on behalf of the Oregon State Bar Business Law Section. We're the people who brought you House Bill 2075 in the last session, which made this change. It was the
thank you.
The law of unintended consequences applies here. The change, as the committee administrator suggested, was to conform the Oregon statute to the Model Business Corporation Act. The Model Act does not have the words or the bylaws in it. And in the course of conforming that, we didn't take into account the fact that there were some of these very significant corporations which had provisions in the bylaws, it wasn't intended to eliminate that ability, and for that reason we're back here in support of this bill to correct our error, if you will, and allow this to continue. And the second section of the bill is designed to make sure that those corporations that had those provisions prior can continue to rely upon them. So acknowledging that we didn't do this right the first time, and that's why we're here.
Thank you, Andrew. Willamette Industries, did they have a staggered board? Does anyone know?
I believe that they did, yes.
What happened there? How come we lost the corporation?
Well, that's a process that happens as a result of a number of steps. Do you want to speak to that?
Yeah, I will say that with Willamette, we did lose the corporation, but it took a lot more time than it otherwise would have. That was a process that got spread out over a couple of years because Willamette did have the anti-takeover protections. The point of these is not necessarily to stop deals from happening, but it is to give it is an opportunity to give management directors, boards of directors of these companies, the opportunity to negotiate and get a better deal for the shareholders and for the companies involved. And I think in the Willamette case, that's likely what happened. But it mainly spread it out over a couple-year period.
Thank you. Any questions? Don't see one. Thank you, guys, for your testimony. Is there anyone else here that would like to testify on House Bill 2439? Seeing none, we will close the public hearing and open work session on House Bill 2439. Representative Esquivel.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I recommend that I make a motion that we send House Bill 2439 to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Esquivel moves House Bill 2439 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, Katie, will you call the roll?
Representative Gelman.
Aye.
Representative Colby.
Aye.
Representative Kicks.
Aye.
Representative Southwick.
Aye.
Representative Shields.
Aye.
Representative
Escobar.
Aye.
Chair
Brady. Aye. Motion carries.
Mr. Chair, when it comes to these here, if somebody is going to carry it, are you going to put it on the consent calendar?
Yeah, I think we should.
Good.
Representative Kitt.
Mr. Chair, I would move that House Bill 2439 be on place on the consent calendar.
Representative Kitts moves House Bill 2439 be placed on the consent calendar. Is there any objection? Seeing none, on the consent calendar. Thank you, Representative.
Mr. Chair, I just didn't want you signing this technical bill to me. I thought Greg, Representative McPherson, would be a lot better equipped than I am.
Representative Shoffley, you need an easy one once in a while. we'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2069. Janet, can you give us a rundown?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2069 was pre-session filed at the request of the State Landscape Contractors Board, and it would allow a license. It makes a number of changes, some cleanup changes and some other provisions that are listed if you have the staff measure summary in front of you. One of the main things it does is allow a licensed landscape business to arrange for construction work without a construction contractor license under specified conditions. The conditions include that the project involves both construction and landscape contracting, that the total value of the construction work not exceed $50,000, that the landscaping business use licensed construction contractors to perform the work, and that the landscaping business file an additional bond or other security of $15,000. And those changes can all be found in Section 2 of the bill. Mr. Chair, I think that I'll just let people kind of run down through and not read all those other changes. They do include some section numbers so you can refer to things. And this bill has a subsequent referral to the Ways and Means Committee, and we also routed a proposed amendment to the that has not been drafted by legislative council that does deal with some of the provisions that I just mentioned about landscape contractors being able to perform construction work. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Janet. Let's see, we've got some 100 miles or so.
Yeah.
That's Snyder. Have Michael Snyder first, please.
Good morning, Chair Brown, members of the committee. My name is Mike Snyder. I am the Landscape Contractors Board Administrator. I'm here to represent House Bill 2069 that was introduced by the Landscape Contractors Board this session. The mission of the Landscape Contractors Board is to promote consumer protection, contractor competency, and fair competition in the landscape industry, construction industry. We do that by a competency test, which is different than normal construction contractors. Our test is an extensive exam of landscape contractors to demonstrate their competency in doing landscape work. We do have two licenses that are required. One is the individual landscape contractor, is the person that takes the exam. And in order to work in the state of Oregon, they have to be either an employee of or an owner of a licensed landscape business, and that is the entity that the consumer contracts with. We have a bond, we have insurance, and we require that the business carry workers' compensation if they're going to hire employees. The Landscape Contractors Board is very similar to the Construction Contractors Board in the sense that we do have a claims resolution, dispute resolution process where we handle all the claims and that come in from consumers against licensed contractors. This holds them accountable for negligent work and breach of contract and those issues that come up. A lot of our claims are settled through mediation, and we have a contract, we have a staff person, a staff investigator that goes out and does mediation for us. About 95% of our claims are resolved through mediation and avoid the hearing process, which we're real pleased with. We have an enforcement program where we enforce the statutes and the rules, and we have a half-time staff investigator on staff to do that with. So we've been able to go in more in depth into some of the investigations that we weren't able to do before. We have an education program. We attend trade shows and try to educate the consumer about the positive things of hiring a licensed landscape contracting business, not necessarily going with the cheapest bid, but to go with those that are licensed, that have the bond and the insurance to protect the consumer in these cases. Landscape contracting is a small area of contracting. For a long time, we were a subset of the Construction Contractors Board, and we became semi-independent on July 1 of 2003, where we moved away from the Construction Contractors Board and started our own facilities, and we have 3.5 staff people that now deal with the issues of landscape contracting. The industry is small. It's 1,140 businesses and about 1,425 individual licensed landscape contractors. We deal with things that are living, plants that are planted. Things that are dealt with that if they're not handled correctly can either die or create extreme hazard. In the case of landscaping, landscape architects many times design the landscape outside of the house area, and landscaping businesses are usually called in to do that work. Upon the review of the statutes and the rules, I was a landscape contractor for 28 years and was on the other side of this picture, and now came to this side of the picture, and was, as we became semi-independent, the issues that I at one time never dealt with very much. You know, I was a business person. I didn't know very much about the laws, except that I was a business person and I did my business and kept myself clean and did the things I needed to do. When I got on this side of the picture, I started looking at the statutes and the rules, and our staff started looking at that, and we found some areas that need to be cleaned up, some areas that are need to be some remedies made. And as a job as administrator, that's my job to look at those things and to bring those to the attention of the industry and to the attention of the Legislative Assembly. That's why we're here today on this bill. It has many facets, and I would like to just briefly go through those so you know what we're talking about in this case. The first one that's caused the most heartburn in this whole thing is Section 2, which has to do with the subcontracting of a landscape business to licensed construction contractors for work that is what we consider landscaping work. Currently, our license does allow a licensed landscape contracting business to perform work that has an overlap with the Construction Contractors Board. Landscape contractors are allowed to put in decks, fences, water features, retaining walls, driveways, walkways, in conjunction with a landscape project. A lot of times a landscape architect will design the whole outside of a dwelling. And many of those features that are included in that project involve some hardscaping type functions, like put in a deck, put in a fence, put in a water feature, retaining wall, all part of that landscape project. As long as the landscaping business was licensed as a landscape contracting business, they could choose to either do that work themselves. They were tested on the competency of doing that work. Number one, the contractor is tested in concrete and in retaining walls and drainage and all those areas, how to construct those things. But they could choose, if they chose that was not an area of expertise that they wanted to work in, they could hire or subcontract to a licensed construction contractor that would pour the concrete for them or build the deck or build the fence or put in the water feature, etc. What we found to be happening is that there are certain areas that a landscape architect would draw or a designer would draw, you know, an in-ground spa, or they would want some high voltage electric run out to a water feature to run the pump. Those areas were not included under the landscape contracting license. So the industry, working with the industry, felt that it would be prudent and streamline the process for a consumer if a landscape contracting business could subcontract out to an electrician or to a plumber or to a person to put an in-ground spa in or a swimming pool, to allow them to subcontract that work out to licensed construction contractors to get that work done. The way it is now, the consumer will call a landscaping business to do that work. They don't generally call a general contractor to do that work. Now, I wrote some amendments. We met with the powers to be of the construction contractors area, the remodelers, the home builders, the carpenters, and the general contractors, and they had some concerns about this section of the bill. And so one of the biggest concerns was that we possibly would be competing for their work. It was not the intention at all of this bill is not to create competition, is to work in conjunction with the construction industry and to subcontract to licensed contractors to get this work done, so that the homeowner didn't have to go have three or four different contracts with different contractors to get their landscape project complete.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Gibbs.
Mr. Chairman, in light of, and I appreciate Michael's testimony coming before and walking through, he's acknowledged that there seems to be some concern, and to use his word, heartburn, on various parts of this bill. So I'm almost wondering if with the recommendation of the chair, knowing that
the possibility that these concerns are going to be amended or compromised or negotiated in some way, that we don't take the committee's time at this point to hear something that's probably going to change anyway, and maybe assign a work group to address these in committee and then bring the changes back to the committee for the discussion of the compromise. And I don't know if that's a motion that the chair would want to entertain. It would seem that if the committee wanted to assign that work group, I would be more than happy to sit on that work group and negotiate with the work group and see if we could hammer out a compromise before discussing what's going to be changed anyway in front of the committee. And I would even be willing to do that at 9:30 this morning and not take the committee's time to do that if you would want to indulge that process to take place.
Thank you, Representative.
Did you understand anything I just said? I tried to sound very, very legislative.
It sounded like maybe you were hung up in the traffic jam this morning.
I was, and I apologize.
I agree. Michael, if I could, get you just to summarize your testimony, and then there's some other people here that have traveled some distance to testify, and I want to get them in. So
appreciate it.
Living alone, Section 2. Then we move on to areas of things we don't have the inactive status for landscape contracting businesses or individuals. We would like to institute that. At the same time, we'd like to institute continuing education because we feel that's an important on twofold. One, if we do have the inactive status, we would like to have continuing education to back up if they become active again. Have that requirement there. The second part of that is that our exam we're trying to get that certified nationally so that it's showing its competency and relevancy, and the part of that national certification is a recertification program, and continued education takes care of that area. One of the most important things about this bill, that's what I consider the most significant part, is the increase in the bond. We have a $3,000 bond today for landscaping that has proven to be insufficient. It goes back to 1977 is when they incorporated that, and we haven't changed it since. So we are asking for a step bond based on the amount of contracting that a business does. $3,000 up to $10,000 with the contracting, $10,000 bond up to $25,000 with the contracting, $15,000 bond if they go above $25,000 in their contracting. We've asked for an increased enforcement ability. There are some things that are crimes that are listed in the statutes that we don't currently have. A rapist or a murderer still can be licensed with us irregardless where they're at. If they're in jail, they can still be licensed with us. And we feel like we should have a hearing process, something that allows us to stop that unless they can prove that they've done restitution and this type of thing to the consumers. This is very similar to other language that is in the Construction Contractors Board. We mirror a lot of what they do, and some of these changes are to bring that up to speed and to get us in the same kind of language. That's basically it.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate it. Any questions? Thank you again.
Thank you very much.
Could I have Michael Weister? Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
You traveled quite a ways to be here this morning. Did
yes,
you
I
come
did.
Over this morning?
Last night.
Last night. Okay. With your testimony, please.
Well, thank you for listening to me. My name is Michael Wister. I'm from Pendleton, Oregon. I have been running a landscape company for 12 years, which is licensed with the state. I really got into looking at this House bill and once it came in to print on the computer, there's a lot of things with the landscaping board that is a really great thing and really appreciate their hard work. This bill that they're introducing, the bigger bonds is a nice idea. It's a good idea because it is underbonded for jobs. Excuse me for stammering. I'm extremely nervous.
But that's fine.
But there is some things to do with licensing that has been really difficult for myself. I run a company that's my dad's license. I've been after the landscape board for 10 and a half years to accommodate my ADA issues, which is a reading disability. It took 10 and a half years for them to finally do that, and that is a federal law statute. I ran this company. My dad shows up on the jobs and looks at it. I design everything. I do all it all, and I have employees that I run. We pay taxes and contribute to our Oregon tax revenue. The board has only one way of testing, and that is by book smarts. Reading some books, doing some work, and they feel that once you pass a test, it's good enough. The proof's in the pudding after you go into business and you run a business. I've gone behind many different licensed, whether it be contractors that built the wall or licensed contractors that build walls, and fix them. The book testing is not really relative to me and what I see because of the lack of anybody can read a book. I was up at a Cinemark, up at some education in Seattle in September. There was a guy that just passed the test, and he couldn't glue two pieces of pipe together and let it hold pressure. The continuing education, I am from the east side of the state. Everything that looks like happens with plumbing and other types of continuing education is always on this side of the state. We have to travel. I am a single dad, full-time parent. Taking money out of my family's money and travel and time is not really conducive. There would be lots of alternate ways to do a continuing education, such as vendors putting videotapes together, and then the board can mail those out. We have many violators in our area. We call the board because of their lack of enforcement or manpower. Many, many times there's people doing jobs that are not licensed, undercutting us. We pay into insurance, workman's comp, and all this. We need to have that revenue. As far as the decks and other things that need to be added into it, it would be a very nice idea. And I would really appreciate the board to have that, or the legislation to vote something like that in, because there's many times I'm on a job, the guy put a manufactured home in or built a real fancy custom house. We need to do porches, decks, patio covers, things like that. I do a lot of it myself. And it's always been a gray area. There's some concerns, and this is just friends helping friends. If a friend of mine wants to help somebody do a sprinkler system, I don't really care if they're going to go and help them. Compensation, does that mean somebody helping somebody and going helping somebody else? I don't care if it takes a little money out of my pocket, it's just friends helping friends. And I've seen instances where that is really overran. Well, you helped dig a ditch. They bought you lunch. That's compensation. That's a little bit on the ridiculous side, but it does happen. Going through my notes here. I want to jump back to the testing issue, which is, I just have a reading disability, and in contacting Attorney General, I was asked to go ahead and sue the state. I'm not in litigation with the state. I find that all the effort that's been put into 269, a lot of it could have been put into just making some different types of testing to make it easier for people. This is a hands-on job. You have a big company out there with 30, 40 employees that owner can slip away and do continuing education, and people out there working, what does a continuing education do? Not really a whole lot. It needs to be focused for the people that are actually doing the work. Holding a title does not mean a whole lot unless you're out there doing the physical work, heaping more paperwork on us, running around, knowing which bond. I'd like to see one bond, maybe $25,000 bond, that would cover most any job. Or a $15,000 bond. This bill is very complex. I've always ran a company with the KISS, keep it simple. Pretty easy to do and keep it simple. We could spend hours and hours writing up more bonds and more this law and that law and this person do that. a little on the ridiculous side as far as I'm concerned, and standing out there and talking to people. I have called personally well over 100-plus licensed landscapers in Oregon. I've talked to many of them, and well in the upper 90% is totally opposed to more control on us. Common sense, building, whether you be planting a tree or building a shop or a deck or patio cover, common sense. OSHA and all those things are already in place. And the people I've talked to are writing letters in. They're tired of it. I talked to a person here in Salem. He's been in business 30 years when the board first came into effect. And his own words were, it was to keep the smaller guy out. I don't want to be a big company. I just want to raise my kid, contribute to the community, coach some sports and things like that, and not have to hire a full-time bookkeeper to keep this stuff straight. In the past, when we have our license, and in the past, because of the two licenses, it's quite confusing for a lot of people. I got confused before the board or the investigator came and called me and said, hey, your license, this one license expired. And I called in a few months before and checked on everything before we got busy for the season. The license is fine. Before they came and talked to me and said, hey, this expired, or sent me a letter, they went and talked to three customers, flashed some type of badge in front of them, and scared them. One of them said, I don't care if he's licensed or not, he's the one doing my work. I think I get my point across, I hope. If there's more hearings on this, I will be here. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael. Questions? Representative Schaffer.
You know, thanks for coming all this way. I love coming out that way. It's beautiful. You know, I have a college education, and I can read pretty well. And I was in the laborers union for several years, and I got my contractor's license in 96. And when I got my contractor, and another friend of mine has his contractor's license too. He can't read, didn't even graduate from high school. But I learned more about the building industry from him than anybody in the world. He can build and destroy anything. When I got my license, and they didn't ask me if I could, my contractor's license, and all I do is flat work pretty much when I'm not being a civil servant. But they never asked me if I could, and I'm not beating up on the contractor's board because I'll explain to you why I think they do all this. They never asked me if I could read a level or a plumb bob or a square or a tape measure or if I was going to cut my fingers off with my table saw. But you know what? There's no doubt in my mind you're a competent, diligent, responsible contractor. I believe you. You wouldn't drove all the way here. But you know what? This law, and just if I may just take a moment, these laws aren't about you. They're trying to protect the consumer from people that aren't like you. And do you think don't feel you're the only one frustrated by all this stuff, because you aren't. But there's teams of lawyers and accountants and bookkeepers and insurance people that sometimes generate tremendous amounts of law I wrote down here the voice of reason under your name, because you do, I think you do represent the voice of reason. But once again, this is just welcome to the capital, I guess, is what I'm trying to say, because if you're frustrated, don't feel like you're the only one that is. And I wish you well in your journey, but once again, I don't think these laws are designed and made to for people. If everyone was like you, we wouldn't need any laws. We could count on people to do the right thing. Unfortunately, there's a bunch of yahoos out there that aren't.
Why are you pointing at me?
Sorry about that. I didn't mean to point at my friend Derek there. That's what generates the vast majority of this stuff. But anyway, I want to just thank you for coming here, too.
Can I comment back?
Certainly.
I understand about customer protection. 99% of the customers I talk to out there are not even aware of the amount of licensing process that has to go through. We're planting flowers. If it dies, you need to warranty it. We have people landscaping without licenses. We call the board. Well, we need a picture. We need this. Or we need this. We have to catch them in the in the act. If there was a penalty for property owners or business owners that hire unlicensed people, would be a great thing, unless they cooperated with an investigation. And I don't know if that's the right. I'm talking the right committee or not, but. When you have Safeway Corporation hiring unlicensed people knowingly to blow out their sprinkler systems for half or three quarters of what I could do it for, that's just the promoting the not letting licensed people have a shot at it. It'd be nice if more people had some work ethic. Having 2 years of landscape working as a landscaper and then applying to get your license. It's nice to be able to do that and shows that you might be able to, but there is many other, there's a test out there. It's Oregon Landscape Association test. It's a hands-on test. Sure, it's an association test, but it shows the person can glue pipe together, can show those things. The board doesn't even give that as an option. That should be there as an option, maybe along with the laws and the rules.
Representative Kitts.
Mike, thanks again for being here. I echo the sentiments of my friend, Representative Schaffler. Just a question. When you talk about, and I used to be in the landscape maintenance side of things, not contracting, but maintenance side of things, and no one has been more critical of the LCB in a lot of ways, but yet has also tried to work with them in a lot of ways. One of the, and for background for the committee, one of the prerequisites to even sit for the Landscape Contractors Board test would be to have owned your own landscape maintenance. One of the criteria is to own your own landscape maintenance company for, I think it's 3 or 4 years. 4 years. In your opinion, Representative Schaffler here as an example, who has a CCB, not an LCB, from this day, and let's say tomorrow he started a landscape maintenance company, mowing lawns, edging lawns, raking out bark dust, picking weeds. After 4 years of doing that, would he be any more qualified to go into the landscape contracting side of things than he is right now?
In my opinion?
In your opinion.
I think if you pass the hands-on test like the association has, not a written test, you get some skill behind raking some bark dust and you get to see where the landscapers have really dropped the ball. But as far as that, no, not really. Because you haven't glued pipe together unless you've done it illegally. As far as, you know, the state requiring, and this was, I think, at the last legislation for maintenance people to be registered, and then what next, the test, and now continuing education, and then 14 different bonds. I could see that handwriting on the wall.
I don't think currently, landscape maintenance what? Folks have to be registered, do they, Michael? Is that correct? No, thank you.
I think we do have a bill that would do that.
Yes, we do.
Representative Escobar.
Well, I think that no matter what we do, no matter how we go about it, there's always going to be those that are unlicensed.
Oh,
yeah. It's just part of the business, I see. I'm not sure how you take care of them. You said 90% of the people you contacted were kind of fed up with the whole thing. Well, the problem here is that we're not dealing with the 90%. We're dealing with that 1 or 2% that's the problem children. And unfortunately, if they had done what was right, we wouldn't be in this position. So no matter what you do, there's always going to be a certain segment of society that's going to try to circumvent the system. Testing is very interesting. You brought it up because I think you have some validity there. Example, when I became a realtor, there were 17 other people in the class. The one thing they do teach you is how to pass a test. But you know something? They don't teach you how to sell real estate. After 3 years, I was the only one left. So that means 16 others went away. And I think that what you're maybe talking to is some kind of an OJT where you have an apprenticeship program or something of this nature to teach people. I mean, you're quite correct. You can learn something from a book, but what does that mean? Example, I could read a book on how to change a tire. Does that mean I could do it?
I'm short of help. You want a job?
No, you work them too hard, Representative Brown. They have to run. I watched them. But see what I'm getting at. You know, you can learn anything from a book, but that doesn't mean you can do it. You can learn how to play baseball from a book, but try to do it. So
I think instead of the board or the putting laws into effect to have OJT apprenticeship and spending all this money, if it dies and you go out of business, you're out of business. If you can't keep your bond in effect and people are not hitting your bond and you have your insurance in effect, I think Idaho does something where you have a $15,000 or $20,000 bond. You have a license, you have to have different things. And they don't have to have workman's comp there, which I disagree with. But if you have complaints or you let something go and you're caught without a permit for sprinklers or something like that, you end up losing your license or your registration, signing a license for 5 years. And it's a lot more simple that way. Not that I want to live in Idaho. It's just an idea. Thank you.
Any other questions? Representative Shields.
Mr. Chair, thank you for coming, Mr. Worcester, all this way. I just want to make sure that I understand completely your concerns. I guess, first of all, it seems you're okay with the notion of allowing landscape contractors the ability to do some construction like lighting and things like that. So you're okay with that part of it?
Right, steps, porches, exactly. Yes.
Okay. And your main concerns are the continuing education, that it's not very feasible for a lot of people and it's not really effective.
It's a lot of money out of our pockets.
Right. And then the second part is the bonding, kind of the complexity of it is your second major concern.
Make it simple.
Okay. Were those the main ones?
Those are the main ones.
Okay.
Thank you.
And then also, lastly, you'd mentioned some concerns about Safeway not using licensed contractors, and I think we do have the responsibility when things like that are brought to our attention. If you could please be sure to let Mr. Snyder know the details of those.
Done. And I'm not saying his fault, but nothing ever happens to these big companies.
Okay.
There's no penalty for him.
What I'm asking you to do is, before you leave today, if you could let him know some of the details, and then maybe you could report back to us on those particular violations. Thanks.
Any other questions? Representative Holby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not sure if this question is actually for you or for Michael Schneider. Maybe if you could join him up there for a moment. I'm curious, you say that you, in your landscaping business, you also do decks and stairs and patio covers and small buildings. And for a lot of that work, do you not need a building permit and like for pouring concrete driveways and those sorts of things?
Right, you have to have a permit. Like, just slightly elaborate on that. The reason I understand the contract of the landscape board is so adamant on testing and things is because this is not a inspected type profession, and on building those other items like decks, patios, and things like that have to have permits and be inspected.
So I'm curious, and this part, well, maybe Michael can jump in on, do the landscape contractors board testing requirements cover, you know, the construction aspects of building steps and handrails and patio covers and, you know, driveways and the such, and they can actually perform that work without a contractor's license? They can do all that work under a landscape contractor's license?
Chair Brown, Representative Holby, the question is twofold for me. One is, there are certain parts of that they can do, other parts that they cannot do. For instance, the driveway, the steps, the handrails on the deck, yes, within their license they are tested about how steps are to be constructed, what the right ratio of riser to tread is, how high the rails have to be based on the codes that are out there, you know, regulating that. However, patio covers, no. Okay, we're not licensed to do patio covers or small buildings. They'd have to be registered with the Construction Contractors Board to do that.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Schaffler.
You know, I got no problem with landscaper contractors doing the stuff that's already in law, but I think it would only be fair to let flatwork workers cut down street trees then, too. You'll have to forget me, Mr.
Chairman.
This is something unrelated.
Chair Brown.
Well, I understand.
Yeah. Chair Brown.
I think we need a hook on him, sir.
Chair Brown, Representative Schaffler, I appreciate that comment. One of the things that I think is different about this is, we're not asking to do the work. We're asking to subcontract it out to licensed construction contractors versus doing the actual work ourselves.
Okay. Any other questions?
Follow, because I'm hearing two things here. I'm hearing that you are doing the work as a landscape contractor on one hand, and that you're just asking that you're allowed to hire a construction contractor to do that work without having the construction contractor's license yourself. So I'm hearing those two things, and I was just trying to pin down, do landscape contractors do this building work that falls under building codes, like the stairs and handrails and decks and driveways, or do they, or is this intended that they hire that out to a licensed contractor?
Chair Brown, Representative Holvey, the current license for landscape contractors allows them to do driveways, decks, fences, water features, retaining walls, walkways, that type of work within their license. They're tested on it, and their license covers those areas. What they're not allowed to do, and they're not asking to do, to have part of their license, what they're after is, in a landscaping project, there's other things that come up that need to be constructed to complete the landscape project that is not within their license, but they would like to be able to subcontract that to a licensed construction contractor to finish and to complete that landscaping project, with acting as a general in that particular area, site feature type of area, and not build buildings and that type of work.
Michael, did you have a comment?
Yeah, I understand, and I know exactly what Mike's talking about, and I would really like to see the landscapers be able to maybe erect a small garage or patio cover or something like that with this bigger bond they're talking about, because it has to be inspected, and we're already building things, and that way the customer deals with one person and not dealing with multiple or trying to find somebody to drive 60 miles in the middle of nowhere to build a building. A small building, not a house, or like a garage or patio cover. Because it does have to be inspected. It should be in there.
Okay, any other questions? I don't see any more. Thank you very much, Michael,
Thank
for
you.
Coming this way. Thank you. Scott Berry, please.
Good morning, members of the committee. Scott Berry with the Oregon Home Builders Association, and I guess at least initially I'm up in opposition to House Bill 2069, and some of those issues have been brought forward by the last two speakers. In the construction contract industry, we have at least currently extremely high liability insurance rates, and those rates are out there and they're reflected in our bid. And they are also reflected in the protection it provides to the customer. So when we're talking about landscapers doing the general contracting for garages or for turning my garage into a rec room or any other number of things, which this bill would allow, at least the initial bill, and I understand there's some amendments, but I haven't had a chance to read through them thoroughly. We've got a serious concern about that, in that landscape contractor doesn't have the liability insurance, and even the bond that we have. Our folks typically have $500 to $1 million worth of liability insurance. And believe me, when that roof fails or that deck falls or something like that occurs, even if that piece was subcontracted out to another licensed contractor from the general still has that $1 million of liability insurance to help protect that consumer. And we think that's something that needs to be there. In terms of allowing them to general a job with other licensed contractors, one additional concern, and I'm not sure what the difference would be between allowing a plumbing contractor or the electrical contractor or any other subcontractor to then general an entire project. I'm not sure what the difference between allowing that landscape contractor and that other subcontractor to do the generaling of an entire project, whether it be a house or a garage or an outbuilding. So, again, some concerns there. I understand there are some amendments, though, and we're going to sit down and talk through those and see if we can't come to some sort of a conclusion. But as the bill is written today, we certainly do have some concerns.
Thank you, Scott. Any questions? Don't see none. Thank you. Bill Cross, please.
Mr. Chair, committee members, I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Landscape Contractors Association, and the association supports House Bill 2069. The Landscape Contractors Board came to the association, I'm going to say late spring, with some different provisions that are you've heard about outlined in 2069 that they wanted to legislate, modify through the legislative process. Our board took the five or six issues, more substantive issues, such as the increased bond levels, continuing education, some of those aspects, and did a membership survey during the summer to find out how the members felt about this. And generally, they were very supportive, and so the board went ahead and endorsed the bill. And actually, when we gave our support to the Landscape Contractors Board, the bills had not been drafted yet. The requests had been submitted, but we basically went through just sort of here's the 7, 8, 9 different kinds of provisions. One of those being one that has turned out to be fairly contentious, allowing a landscape contractor to more or less perform as a general contractor on projects related to landscape projects, site-specific projects. The language had not been drafted at that time. It's overly broad. We are very supportive of the amendment, which focuses on activities where, or projects typically where the landscape contractor is contacted by a homeowner, a small business operator, for a remodel of their landscaping typically, and included in that might be installation of a light feature, or a water feature, for example, and some lighting's required, or a driveway, and now they want some lights along the driveway. And those, the lighting is something that is outside the scope of the landscape contractors. It's a small project where they'd like to be able to, for the consumer's convenience, arrange for a licensed electrical contractor to come in and perform that as part of the overall project. It is not intended and to include new construction of buildings, garages, remodels, extensions, anything of that nature. It is, and hopefully the language in the amendment will get us back to what at least the Landscape Contractors Association is supportive of. The other areas that we are supportive is the stepped bond increase. This was something that actually the LCB modified at our request because we were concerned that some of the smaller landscape contractors that aren't involved in larger projects might find it more difficult to financially support a $25,000 bond or $15,000 bond when they're working on relatively small projects. So it was stepped in relationship to the size of projects that a landscape contractor would be involved in, and we support that provision. We also are very interested in supporting the professional enhancement of the industry, and through continuing education, that is one component. The Landscape Contractors Association has worked closely with LCB on trying to develop some professional training programs, and as a part of that, a continuing education every couple of years for these landscape contractors would be very appropriate. You've got my written testimony. I'd be happy to answer any questions, but in general, we are very supportive of the bill along with the proposed amendment.
Thank you, Bill. Representative Escobar.
Mr. Cross, are we actually just relying upon the contractor to get the appropriate bonding according to what they're doing? And if so, how do you monitor it?
Mr. Chair, Representative Escobar, that would be the role of the Landscape Contractors Board to monitor whether they've got the appropriate level of bonding, and I guess you'd have to ask the administrator on how they do intend to do that. Many of the contractors that are involved in, frankly, larger projects already have much higher bond levels. So, frankly, this isn't really an issue for many of the contractors. But you're right, there would be some smaller contractors that might all of a sudden decide, you know, to bid on a larger project, get the proposal, and would need to make go out and purchase the larger bond. And I'm sure Mr. Snyder has that all planned out.
Being called again.
Okay.
Sure he does, Mr. Cross.
Chair Brown, Representative Esquivel. We depend a lot on the industry for governance of their own industry. When there's a bid put out there, and it's, say it's $10,000 bid, and somebody knows they need to have a bond, that information about the bond is on the website. People can check the bond levels. And if a business goes out and bids against another company and they find out that person doesn't have the right level bond, we will know about it, rest assured. Secondly, we do site checks on job sites where we would possibly check in on the person, see how much the contract would be. There will be a civil penalty for not having the correct bond. Thirdly, if there's a claim filed by a consumer against a business and we get the contract amount and their bond is not sufficient to that, they will have that to deal with, plus a civil penalty. That's the way I look at it.
Hold on.
But what I'm saying is it can be on any kind of website you want, but if the consumer doesn't have that information, it means nothing. They have to have something handed to them saying you go to website A here and it will outline the contractual stipulations. Do we provide that service?
Representative Brown, Vice Chair Esquivel, we try to provide that service through our education processes at the trade shows, try to tell people what the requirements are for licensing. We try to have consumers contact us before they hire a contractor. That's one of the things that we struggle with as an industry is, number one, and I'll digress just a little bit. We were with the Construction Contractors Board for many years, and we're a small little section of that deal, and people didn't know the Landscape Contractors Board existed. It's only in the last several years that we've been making a real push to get the identification of this board to the consumer that landscape contracting does require a license. And we are trying our best to get that information out to the public in as many ways as possible and educate our contractors to say, yes, you know, you need to have this information out in front of the consumers. We do have work to do on that area.
Representative Shoffler.
Thank you. This is for either one, Mr. Snyder or Mr. Cross, but if you all can't come to some agreement on scope and jurisdiction and who's licensed or bonded or insured or not to do what, there's still a bunch of stuff in this bill that's good, right? Am I correct in assuming that you want?
Chair Brown, Representative Shoffler, yes.
And I hope you all get something worked out for the sake of harmony in the world. But then I do have a question about the have landscapers' liability went up relative to the rise in contractors' liability? Is that a problem in that industry as well?
Chair Brown, Representative Shoffler, we have not seen the increase in the cost of liability insurance for landscape contractors. We're not dealing with things like mold and things that the building industry has been dealing with lately in our industry. There has been an increase, but not significantly to where, at least I haven't heard a lot about it from our industry.
Thank you.
Is there any other questions? Seeing none, thank you very much. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Janet?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Snyder, I have one question.
Back to you.
Sorry. I just went to sleep there. What's the threshold that someone has to get a landscape contractor's license versus a maintenance work?
Representative Brown, Ms. Atkins.
That's Pandora's box that you just opened with that question.
If I understand the question, what is the threshold when they have to get a landscape contractor's license versus if they're doing landscape maintenance? If a business is performing the construction of a new landscape area. Like if they're going to plant new lawn, new trees, new shrubs, if they're going to install a deck, if they're going to install a fence, a water feature, a walkway or a driveway in conjunction with a landscaping project, do that kind of construction work, if they're preparing the ground, the final grade, they're installing an irrigation system, they're repairing an irrigation system beyond putting a couple heads on or, you know, adjusting some heads, they need to be licensed with the Landscape Contractors Board. If they're mowing lawns, trimming shrubs, pruning up to 15 feet in height, they're fertilizing, just taking care of an existing landscape, they do not need to be licensed in the state of Oregon at this time.
Representative Kitts.
What if there's a 25-foot tree that they want pruned down to 15 feet?
If they're going to go above 15 feet, if that tree is above 15 feet high, they will not be able to cut that down. They have to have a construction contractor's license to do that work.
So once the construction contractor comes in there and cuts it down, then they're able to maintain that cut.
Representative Kitts, you are correct.
Thank you.
Thank you again, Michael. Is there anyone else that would like to testify on House Bill 2069? Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Stephen Cafori. I represent the Oregon Remodelers Association. We also had concerns with the first bill. I got the amendments and sent them off my folks, and they said they were more happy with them than when they were with the first bill, but I would like to spend time and with the, if there's going to be a work group,
there
make
is.
Sure that we can come up with a bill that everyone thinks works for all people concerned, and especially protection of the consumers.
Thank you. Thank you. We're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2069, and Representative Kitts has volunteered to chair a work group, and you'll put that together and give us the results of that. Thank you, Representative.
And I would just also, Mr. Chair, for the record, if anybody that's interested in being a part of that work group that's listening or vested interest that are currently here know of other people that are interested, please let them know, and I will get a memo to the three people that have testified here on behalf of that work group. So,
thank you, Representative. Is anything for the work session? Anything else? Okay. Is there, any of the members have anything else for the committee?
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. The chair would ask that rules be suspended to allow Representative Kitts to vote on House Bill 2442 and 2439. Is there any objection? Okay. Is there any objection? Seeing none, Representative Kitts, how do you vote?
Aye.
House Bill 2442.
Ecstatically, aye.
Representative Kitts votes aye on 2442. Thank you. Is there any other thing? Representative Holby.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to inform you and the committee or anyone else that cares to know we are having our work group on House Bill 2180 and 2181 this afternoon, 2 o'clock in room 470.
Thank you, Representative. And without that, with nothing else, we're adjourned.